Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 146, recorded Tuesday, November 20th, 2018. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast: Rental Demolition Derby and Traveler's Gift Guide. So coming to you today from the Travel Commons studios outside of Chicago, Illinois, trying to give you something to keep you entertained or at least occupied as you thread your way through the Thanksgiving holiday travel traffic, be it airports, trains, roadways. The forecasts are for a 5% increase in Thanksgiving travel over last year. I have to tell you, I've been trying to get this episode done for the past 2 weeks, but I just haven't been able to make it happen. Since we last spoke, I've been in the midst of a weekly commute between Chicago and Dallas. It's kind of the standard consultant commute, leaving O'Hare Monday morning at 7 a.m., leaving DFW Thursday afternoon, Thursday evening around 5 p.m., kind of the hitting both consulting rush hours, I guess you'd say. The lounges are packed. The Starbucks lines sort of tail way back. And no matter what your status, you're in a middle seat if you don't book 3 weeks ahead of time. And for a mere Advantage Platinum like me, there is no chance of an upgrade. I kind of do click through American's website to request the upgrade every week, more for, sort of the entertainment value than any expectation of getting a front cabin seat. This week, I was number 35 on the upgrade list. Traffic between these two American hubs actually is pretty amazing. The first week of this commute, I ended up taking a 6:30 flight back to Chicago, and it was a fully packed 787 Dreamliner. So I'm thinking to myself, hey, I got to have a good shot at an upgrade on this flight with, all the first and business class seats in the plane. Nope. No luck here either, though I did get up to the teens on the upgrade list, number 15 to be exact. I counted myself actually lucky to get out of a center seat on that flight at the last minute. I have to tell you, I'm not a huge fan of DFW Airport. It's a massive, sort of spread out place with a $4 toll charge just to drive the rental car out. The semi-circular terminals are very spread out, and they've got three security checkpoints arrayed around the perimeter of each terminal. But only one of those tends to have pre-check, and it's really not well marked. There have been many times when I've just sort of walked between different security checkpoints just to try and find the pre-check one. I tweeted about this out in frustration probably a couple weeks back. Again, sort of after doing this kind of tour of all the checkpoints, the DFW Airport Twitter account came back pretty quick with a link to their website that has the locations and the hours of each checkpoint, with the one that has pre-checked bolded. It's a very useful web page. I've now bookmarked it on my iPhone. And actually, what I'll do is I'll post a link to it in the show notes. So the next day, when I was back in Chicago, I was downtown getting kind of my afternoon espresso jolt at Intelligentsia Coffee. Not a completely full-on hipster coffee joint. I mean, there's no turntable playing vintage vinyl, but they are a bit fussy about their coffee. So you place the order, they ask your name, then you sort of mill around waiting while they craft your coffee. So I'm scrolling through email. The barista's calling out names in the background. He calls out Marco, and completely on reflex, my inner child responds, Polo, and not exactly quietly underneath my breath. The guy sitting across from me looks up from his MacBook and just looks at me and just starts laughing. The guy getting his coffee, Marco, I think, he turns around and gives me just a slightly nasty look. This is not the first time I think he's heard that game. It looked nasty, or maybe he was just puzzled, or maybe a bit of both.
Thank you.
So following up, Ellen Marco, a longtime listener, posted a travel story on the Travel Commons Facebook page. Ellen writes, I flew from San Francisco to Munich with a colleague last month on United Airlines business class. It was my first trip on a 787. Nice plane and really decent service from the United team. We had an early morning arrival and an hour to kill before our transportation arrived. My colleague's 1K status couldn't get us into the Lufthansa arrivals lounge for showers. I pulled up the Priority Pass app on my iPhone. My membership came with my Chase Sapphire Reserve card and saw that there was an Atlantic lounge over in Terminal 1 that had shower facilities. So we took the bus over to Terminal 1, which seems to serve like a lot of second-tier airlines, some European ones, Middle East. Anyhow, pulling out my physical Priority Pass card, as opposed to the digital one that shows up in the app, I got both of us into the lounge and into two shower rooms. The lounge sort of only offered the basics and needed a bit of a refresh, but we were happy to find it that morning, including the free beer. Well, you know, Germany, you got to have that breakfast beer. That's a great thing, Alan. Thanks for sharing that. And, you know, and good on you for figuring that all out. There are so many nooks and crannies in the card benefit world. There's real value there, but you have to think about it and dig in a bit. I mean, the last time I used my Priority Pass, which actually I got through my Amex Platinum card, was last summer, when I was connecting through Dublin on the way over to London. And that lounge was kind of similar to Alan's Munich experience. Pretty basic, little threadbare, but a reasonable place for me. It was a reasonable place for a cup of tea and breakfast. So my son Andrew used his Priority Pass card, which he also, like Alan, got through his Chase Sapphire Reserve, to get a $28 credit at a restaurant in Boston Logan, which ended up paying for a pre-flight meal and a couple of beers. Andrew said, you know, For two of us, I think we were due $56 in credit, but we wanted to be able to board the plane, so we kind of cut ourselves off. Good move on that. A colleague of mine told me that in LaGuardia, after Amex's Centurion Lounge closed, his United Gold status got him into the Air Canada Lounge to wait out the rest of a long flight delay. He said, I only thought they let in Star Alliance Gold passengers for international flights, but Air Canada let me in for my LaGuardia O'Hare flight. That was a nice benefit, nice little surprise. And then there are things for me like the 10 GoGo in-flight Wi-Fi passes that I get every year through my Platinum card that I never burn my way through, or kind of I think it's $200 in annual statement credit that I get with Amex on United. And I always forget about it. And then I'm just kind of surprised to see then the statement credit reversing that out. And so this just reminds me that I've got to pay more attention to this stuff because I hate leaving money on the table. Going back to my comments on the Chicago to Dallas commute, I have to say that there are two good things about doing that sort of that trunk line, that hub-to-hub commute versus, say, my last regular commute between O'Hare and Charlottesville, Virginia. First good thing, there's great flight frequency. Between American and United, there's a flight almost every hour in the morning and the evening. And then, you know, that's not even looking at the Southwest schedule out of Love Field. And the second good thing is there are no RJs, no regional jets. I have to tell you, I'd forgotten how nice it is to be able to stand up straight in the aisle, let alone stand up straight in the toilet. I got to tell you, you got to find happiness in small things. I was talking to a colleague about this, about flying American, United, Southwest, really based on the most convenient times and prices, and then maybe the equipment, kind of avoiding those regional jets when I can. And my buddy said, you know, I'm always amazed at how promiscuous you are in your airline choices. I found that a very interesting word choice, one that, I don't know, kind of speaks to how invested people can get in their travel choices and their travel carrier choices. Though, I don't know, it can be a bit of a Stockholm syndrome for folks who have to fly out of fortress hubs, like this guy I was talking to. He's got a very conflicted relationship with United out of Newark. He said to me, I think actually you're more right than I am, he said, kind of in and around that whole promiscuous comment. He's won K on United, which is their top tier. I'm mid-tier on United and American. And kind of comparing notes, he hasn't gotten any more upgrades than me. And though I board after 1Ks or executive platinums on American, I've yet to have a problem finding overhead space, even on these packed flights to and from DFW. I've said this before. I don't think there's that much difference or a meaningful enough difference between mid and top tier loyalty ranks, and certainly not enough to make me want to take a less convenient flight to earn the extra miles that I would need to stay top tier. A study of U.S. airport growth hit the Travel Commons inbox, kind of the press release on it, on and around, I think, about Halloween. And the study was saying that the two airports with the biggest drop in traffic are Memphis and Cincinnati. And we had talked about this back in the August episode when I was flying in and out of Cincinnati for a four-week project. Nice airport, but I said back then that it felt a bit overbuilt, and about how Cincinnati and Memphis felt sort of empty after being de-hubbed by Delta. Well, it turns out my sense wasn't wrong. This new survey kind of ground through about 10 years of FAA traffic data and came to kind of the same conclusion. Memphis lost the most traffic, down 62%. Cincinnati was second on that list, losing 51% of its traffic. So you can guess that neither made the Wall Street Journal's new ranking of the 20th largest U.S. airports. Denver, Orlando, and Phoenix were the top three finishers, while the three New York City airports, LaGuardia, JFK, and Newark, brought up the rear, sort of numbers 18, 19, 20. Surprises? I don't know. Actually, maybe that LaGuardia wasn't in last place, given all the construction disruptions. That LAX, I was kind of surprised that LAX was higher at number 9 than Minneapolis-St. Paul at number 11, and that O'Hare was one spot higher than San Francisco, 15 versus 16. I don't know, probably has to do with their methodology as much as anything, how they weighted all the different score components, things like on-time arrivals, average TSA waits, cost of on-prem parking, average ticket cost. It's interesting, though, to compare this ranking with Skytrax's ranking of global airports. Denver was the top U.S. airport on both of the lists, number 1 on the Wall Street Journal list, number 28 on Skytrax's list. Cincinnati, though, is the second U.S. airport on the Skytrax's list at number 34, which kind of makes sense when you look at the methodology. Skytrax is focused on the in-airport experience, terminal seating, cleanliness, queue time, friendliness of staff. With all these criteria, I don't doubt that Cincinnati should rank high. Actually, it's probably helped by now being a bit overbuilt. Lots of space, fewer people to clean up after. The Wall Street Journal's, you know, kind of study methodology, they're ranking a bit more wide-ranging, looking at both inside and outside the terminal. Things like I said, average fares, rental car taxes and fees, number of nonstop destinations, and that sort of the dominance of the largest airline in, you know, for each airport. Those all go into the rankings. I'll actually put links to both studies in the show notes for those kind of who are interested in doing a deeper dive. It was interesting. It's an interesting, they're both interesting studies to kind of browse through. Hey, and if you've got any questions, a story, a comment, a travel tip, the voice of the traveler, send them along. The email address is comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com. You can send in an audio comment, a Twitter message to M. Peacock, post your thoughts on the Travel Commons Facebook page like Alan did, or you can always hit the Instagram account at Travel Commons, or go old school, post your comments on the website at travelcommons.com. The first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is a rental demolition derby. Look, I've rented a lot of cars in my business travel and really have never crashed one. I drive them off the lot. I use them for 3 to 4 days. I fill them back up with gas, usually, and then return them to the lot and walk away. So when I picked up a car from Hertz at Edinburgh Airport back in September, I skipped all the insurance coverages, took the keys to a brand new Toyota hybrid crossover, it was really kind of nice, and drove it off the lot. This was my fourth September in a row renting from that Hertz location, and it never had an incident, even when driving a manual on the left side of the road while shifting with my left hand. It takes a little bit, but I'm usually, by the time I'm getting out of the airport, I'm in good shape. So really never had an incident other than a Fiat that dropped its transmission, but that wasn't my fault. So I figured no need to waste the collision damage waiver charges. You can probably see where this is going. The next day, I was driving a narrow road in St. Andrews, heading south out of town to go sort of knock around the fishing villages, little fishing villages that are on the north bank of the Firth of Forth. Roads in Scotland can get narrow. Driving the one-lane roads through the Highlands are an acquired talent. But this road that I was driving in a residential neighborhood, and I've driven it many times, so I couldn't believe it when I heard a big thump as I drove past a van. Damn, I thought, had I drifted over kind of to the left and popped that van's rearview mirror? Oh my God. So I pulled over, hopped out of the car. No, it was worse. It was much worse. There was a huge crease along the left side of the car. Actually, it just missed the front wheel. So the car was still drivable, but very ugly. I walked down to the van. It belonged to a nearby community center. In a hurry to pick up the kids from school, the driver had actually pulled out into me as I drove past. I pulled out an accident report form that Hertz had helpfully put in the glove compartment. We filled it out. We ended up skipping calling the police since no one was hurt. Both signed it, and then off they went to pick up the kids. So again, not my fault. But still, a few days later, I'm turning in a car with a full tank of gas and some extra body work. I point out the damage to the Hertz guy. He pulls up a different tab on his Samsung tablet. Click, 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 click. Damage front left wing. Damage front left door. Damage rear left door. Took a couple of pictures with the tablet. And because I had skipped the CDW, the collision damage waiver, out burped the bill. £780, or about $1,000. They ran it through on my Chase Sapphire Visa card, which I had given to Hertz because, as I was poking through the nooks and crannies of the Chase website before I left home, I confirmed that the card would cover UK rental car damage if I had charged the rental to it. So the next week, when I'm back home, I found where to file a claim. Now, it wasn't labeled in the most straightforward fashion, but Google eventually uncovered it. I created a claim, uploaded a scan of the accident report, the Hertz receipt, a couple of iPhone pictures that I had taken of the damage, and then waited. The website said they'd take 2 weeks to review it and get back to me. 3 weeks later, I called. The guy said, well, you know, we've sent you an email asking for 2 more documents from Hertz. Well, I never saw that, but, you know, you never know what gets caught up in the spam filtering. He was a nice guy, so, you know, he told me exactly what they needed. They wanted a copy of the original Hertz agreement, which I had, and I think I had ended up leaving in the car, and then they wanted Hertz's repair cost breakdown. That seemed like a reasonable request. So I called up Hertz. I got a very helpful woman who put in a request, said I'd get both of those documents within a week. Actually, within a couple of days, Hertz sent me exactly what I needed. I uploaded them to my claim and waited another 2 weeks. On day 2 weeks plus one this time, I called. A woman looked at my file, said it was still being reviewed by management, but then actually she put me on hold and rang them directly for the status. 2 minutes later, she picked up and she told me, oh, look, they've approved my claim. 48 hours, the $1,000 showed up in my bank account. Took me a bit over sort of 2 months that I was out the money, but Chase paid my claim and with a minimum amount of hassle. Definitely worth the annual fee that I pay them. Now, while I've had a good rental car record in Scotland, My record in Hungary has not been quite that clean. Indeed, every time I've driven in Hungary, I've done something to the car. The last time I drove, we were a couple of blocks away from the rental return that was next to the Marriott on the Danube River. So I'm like, I'm just about there. Pulling into an intersection after stopping at a stop sign, a motorcycle messenger plowed into the front of the car, flew across the hood, landing in the street on the other side of the intersection. Luckily, he was in sort of full helmet and cycling leathers, so he was unhurt. Probably a little shaken up, but unhurt. The rental car, not so lucky. The entire front end was ripped off. The rental car guy showed up as the police were finishing my report. He looks at the front of the car, and the only sound he made was, "Hoo-ha." It just, he was stunned. I pulled our suitcases out of the trunk. I gave him the keys. We start wheeling our bags down the sidewalk to the Marriott because this time I had bought the collision damage waiver. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is Traveler Gift Guide. So look, as we come into the Christmas shopping season, which will officially start on Friday, I thought it would be useful to pull together some suggestions for the frequent traveler in your life. Or if you're the frequent traveler, here's a list of hints you might want to drop on family members looking for ideas. Top of the list is a good battery charger. Look, whatever the size or form factor, slimline, lipstick, high capacity brick, having that second or third charge readily available is critical to, you know, staying up on changes that are being made to your flights or when your hotel room is ready, whatever, just getting notified. And also if you're flying and now using electronic boarding passes, which I do, like the last thing you want to do is for your phone to die while you've laid it on top of the boarding scanner. It saves you from stalking cleaning crews to find a live power outlet on your layover or having to negotiate with your seatmate for possession of that outlet between you two. I'm always looking to shed weight, so I've retired kind of the heavy no-name pack that I picked up in the depths of Beijing's Pearl Street Market. And I dumped that for an Anker slipstick size charger. I really like it, and I've actually bought three of them, gave one to my wife and daughter. It's cheap peace of mind. Now, actually, on my shopping list, trying to catch up to what's already been a cold winter, and we're only halfway through November, is one of those puffy coats that you see everybody wearing, but one of the thin ones, like the Patagonia Nano Puff, one that's going to kind of smoosh down to nothing in the front pocket of my suitcase or will fit into the crevices of a jammed full overhead bin. Now, right next to that on the list, a man's scarf. An incredibly undervalued piece of sort of what I'll call intermediate winter wear in an airplane cabin or even a hotel room where a coat is just too much, especially if in the aircraft cabin, if you're in the middle seat, but there's still a draft that's kind of chilling you. A scarf around the neck is just enough without being too much. I'm a big scarf convert. Now, you may have to teach your frequent traveler guy, but hey, you know what? You can have fun with the colors. Now, if you've got someone on your list who's just embarking on the road warrior life, how about a black 20-inch hard-sided carry-on? Black, because not only does black make you look thinner, it makes your bag look thinner to the gate agents hunting for bag sizer bait. Black also doesn't show stains, and the 20-incher should get on board probably about 90% of the airlines out there. And the hard sides are the easiest to get in and out of that bag sizer if your not-yet-status traveler gets waylaid by sort of an overzealous gate agent. So there you go. Black 20-inch hard side carry-on, great for somebody just starting out. Now, if you're going to go big for your frequent traveler, or maybe, you know, for those December babies, you're combining Christmas and birthday gifts, noise-canceling headphones are a statement gift. The good ones, the Bose or Sony's, that kind of make the drone of the jet engines disappear with a flick of the switch, they're about a $300 number. But I have to tell you, the drop in stress level and blood pressure that accompanies the flick of that switch, you just don't realize how much that drone affects you until you turn on your Bose. Just that drop makes it worth the number. A lot of times, I'll put my Bose on without plugging them into my phone or the seat back screen, just for that quiet. Now, everything in my briefcase has to earn its space. And I've been carrying Bose noise-canceling headphones for, 10, maybe 15 years. They're nowhere near compact, but I've never thought about leaving them behind. Kind of another idea for the music or podcast lover is a small portable Bluetooth speaker. I've actually started packing mine again for trips that have been a week or longer. For a couple of days, I'm fine wearing headphones or using my iPhone speaker. But longer than that, or if I'm with the family, say, in an Airbnb, I want something a bit more, social. I'm still using my six-year-old Jambox speaker, the one that kind of created the category. Now, the maker, Jawbone, went out of business last year, but the speaker still works. Now, there are newer, better ones out there at all sorts of price points, and then the ones that can act as speaker phones are nice to have if they can fit your budget. And finally, a stocking stuffer idea. A travel notebook, something that your traveler can jot down thoughts, ideas, observations, to-do lists while waiting, say, for the flight to board, the train to come, or the room to be made up. You know, there are chunks of downtime, of idle time when you travel. The travel notebook doesn't have to be anything extravagant, no leather embossed cover, but it should be small enough to fit in a pocket, but also substantial enough, something that can survive being knocked around in the bottom of a briefcase and that has paper quality that will hold onto those thoughts for a while. Now, I used to use a Moleskine notebook, kind of the 3.5 by 5.5 inch size and kind of hardcover with a little ribbon around it. I really like that. I used that for a number of years, but I have actually switched over to kind of a similar size, but it's a European size A6, so about that same size. And it's a Clairefontaine notebook. The soft cover on that fits better when I just want to put it in the back pocket of, say, my jeans. And the paper is a bit more fountain pen friendly, because not only have I gone hipster from the earlier episode talking about using shaving soap, but I've also got a fountain pen thing going on. So anyhow, Moleskine, about $10. For $7, you can get two of the Clairefontaines. You can go a little bit more whimsical and get a 3-pack of Field Notes for $13. Whatever it is, it's an easy fit to your budget, and they actually will fit into the stocking. So there you go. Something to fit all sizes and budgets in time for Black Friday, Cyber Monday, or if you're just killing time at the airport waiting for your Thanksgiving flight to leave. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 146. I hope you all enjoyed the show, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. Indeed, I hope you tell somebody else to subscribe, because I finally got around to updating the subscribe section on the website. It's kind of on the upper right-hand side of the website, and it's got links to all the places you can find us: SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, Alexa, iTunes, and Spotify. Check out the show notes for all the music links. And again, if you've got a story, thought, comment, gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along, text or audio file, comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com, and Peacock on Twitter, the Travel Commons page on Facebook, the Instagram site, the website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who's taken the time to send in emails, tweets, post comments on the website. Really appreciate it. And, to everybody who is traveling over this Thanksgiving holiday, safe travels, good times with your family. Thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. We'll talk again soon. Bye now.